How many of you guys remember, well, first of all, let me add my welcome to you. I'm Shannon. It's great to have you here this morning. How many of you remember hearing Bible stories when you were growing up? Yeah, some of us did, some of us didn't. You know, that may not have been your background, and that's okay, but you have to understand that in my house, we didn't get bedtime stories about, you know, bunnies and foxes and turtles and trains and stuff like that. I mean, when I was being rocked on my mother's knees, I was told Bible stories. And sometimes you'll hear me allude to a story maybe, like, and I'll just kind of rattle off names like that, and you'll think, well, he must have known those people for a long time. And I have, but it's not through any study of my own. It's all a credit to my mom and dad who started me out young with these stories. I can remember hearing a story, you know, when I was really, really young that I alluded to a few weeks ago and said it really isn't a good children's story. You know, a story about Noah and the flood and killing everybody in the world and that sort of thing. And I can remember hearing about Moses and the 10 plagues, about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and David and Miriam and Deborah and Esther and, you know, all these different stories. But as I got older, I didn't hear those stories that much. And sometimes the only place I would hear them was if I would step into a children's classroom or if I happened to be here during VBS. And as an adult, I've realized it's a sad thing that some of those stories have gotten left behind. You know, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, after the Apostle Paul alludes to a number of Old Testament men and women, he says this. He says, these things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for us. Okay, well, that's pretty important stuff. If God saw fit for us to know about these people so that we could see their examples and be warned about some things in our own lives. So over the next couple summer months, you know, we've been in a series, if you're just joining with us, if you haven't been here with us since Easter, we just spent 13 weeks in the book of Genesis, chapters 1 through 11, a series called Bookends, in which we looked at Genesis, and then we'll look at Revelation after Labor Day. So that's kind of where we've been. But for the next couple summer months, I just want to share with you, as staff, we just want to share with you some Bible stories. They're not going to be childish in any sense of the word, but I really want us to look at some of God's examples and warnings. Most of them are going to be from the Old Testament. Some will be from the New. Because God has given us examples of men and women on both sides of the fence. Good and bad. Right? Friends of God, enemies of God. Heroes and zeros. In fact, that's going to be the name of the series that we're in, all right? Heroes and zeros. And I just want to sort of jump into the text and into the lives of these men and women and say, okay, this is what was going good in their life, and this is what was their downfall over here. And while some folk that we look at are going to be considered as heroes by us, you just need to know that there's really only one hero in this book, all right? And that is Jehovah God. He is the hero of every single story. But we're going to start this morning by talking about a guy who you and I, if you raised your hand earlier, you may have heard stories about him. He was the grandson of Abraham. He was the son of Isaac. He was the father of Joseph. God changed his name to Israel, but we simply know him as, anybody know? Jacob. Anybody remember who Jacob was? Not quite as many hands. All right. Abraham was the man we mentioned last week. You know, he was the beginning of God's plan for taking care of our sin problem. He was called by God to separate himself from his people and to ultimately create a nation, the Jewish nation, the Israelite people. Abraham was blessed when he was old with a son of promise. In fact, when he was told he was going to have kids, his wife laughed. And so they named this boy Laughter, Isaac. Isaac was blessed with the first twins that we read about in the Bible, Jacob and Esau. And hundreds of years later, the prophets, as they write to the Israelite people, they will talk about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, you got to figure, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they were heroes, right? At least that's what I've always thought. Jacob's the one who God blessed with the 12 sons who would later become the 12 tribes of Israel. I always assumed Jacob was a good guy. Not so. All right? Jacob was a cheat and a scoundrel from the word go. Jacob came out of the womb as a twin, grasping hold of his brother's foot, saying, no, 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 no. Well, actually, I don't think he's saying it, but as if he were saying, no, 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 me first, because that's the way he lived his life. We're going to see in a few moments what kind of trickster he was to his father, to his father-in-law, how he was willing to even use his own wife and children as a buffer between him and the responsibilities for the mistakes he should have been taking responsibility for, you know? And all the while, God is constantly saying to Jacob, I'm here with you, buddy, and I'll take care of you. This morning's lesson is for the scoundrel, all right? If you know a scoundrel, don't point. Or if you are a scoundrel, this is one for you to pay attention to, because I'm shocked at how willing God is to even hear their cry, our cry, right? But then I remember why. It's because we're not slaves. You know, we're not judged in God's eyes as strangers or foreigners. We are his children. And even when your son or daughter is a scoundrel, you make room for them in your heart, don't you? Some of you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, we've all got scoundrels in our family, all right? And what they want is the same thing we want. We want a father who, when we say, God, I have messed up, he's willing to say, all right, let me show you how to start over. Now, we'll get there, but first off, let's just take a look at this scoundrel, all right? We're in the book of Genesis again, but we've been 13 weeks, chapters 1 through 11. We're going to jump ahead to chapter 25 and work our way quickly, hopefully, through to chapter 35. It's a story that you may not want to tell your kids if they just happen to go next door, because this is not a hero of the Bible that you want them to emulate. Jacob is, whether you knew it or not, he is a zero. First off, you got twins that are born into the family. Genesis 25, 24. When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment, so they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. So if you're pushing 60 this morning, imagine having twins this week. Huh? That'll change your world, won't it? Jacob and Esau must have been a handful for Isaac, but he managed to do what we all say we're not going to do. You know, he managed to love one of them a little bit more. Let's face it, he loved both of his sons, but Esau, the older one, the ruddier one, he was a macho hunter. You know, the Bible says that Isaac had a taste for wild game, and so Esau was the boy that he could go deer hunting with if they hunted deer. He was the boy that he could go, you know, hunt wild boar with. We might say that Esau was a manly man. Not so Jacob. Scripture says that Jacob liked to hang around the tents. Jacob liked to be at home. Guess who liked him better? Mom. Yeah, shocker, right? So you got twin boys, one Mr. Macho, one Mr. Hangout at the house, all right? And Mr. Macho comes home one day after hunting, and he's starving. And we're told that he comes in, he's tired, and he's famished. And Jacob, who's been hanging around the house, he knows how to cook. So he's learned how to cook, and he's making a bowl of red stew. Genesis 25:30 says that Esau said to Jacob, quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished. That's why he was also called Edom. And Jacob replied, first, sell me your birthright. That's a brother for you, isn't it? You know, he's got you down and he decides he's going to kick you, right? You give me the most valuable thing that you've got. Give me the thing that I've wanted since the beginning. I wanted to be firstborn. That's why I was trying to pull you back. Understand, Esau doesn't have the right to give Jacob what we'll look at later, the blessing He could give Jacob the money, he could sign over his inheritance, but he cannot give the blessing that goes with the birthright. That was only his father's to give. But Jacob didn't care. He was a scoundrel. He was a zero. And he looked at his brother and he said, listen, I'll make you a deal, all right? You give me first place in your family. You're going to get the bulk of the inheritance. I think it's 60 to 70%. You're going to get the father's first blessing. You give that to me and I'll give you a bowl of soup. That sounds fair, right? I mean, no, he's a scoundrel. But Esau says, what good's a birthright to me? I'm dying here, you know? We really don't know how old these boys are, but they must have been teenagers. Would you not agree? Because he's starving. I'm starving to death. I got to have something to eat. Jacob says, here's your food. Esau said, here's your birthright. And Jacob's just smiling. Fast forward a few years. Look at chapter 27. It says, when Isaac was old and his eyes were so weak that he could no longer see, he called for Esau, his older son, and said to him, my son, here I am, he answered. Isaac said, I'm now an old man, and I don't know the day of my death. Now, get your weapons, your quiver, and your bow. Go out into the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare me the kind of tasty food I like and bring it to me to eat, so that I may give you my blessing before I die. It's a father's last request, right? I'd like some wild meat. You know the way I like it, son. Fix it the way you did when we go camping together. So Esau goes out. Well, little does he know that mom's listening outside the tent flap, right? So she calls in the boy that she loves and she says, this is it. This is the chance, right? Dad's about to give the blessing. So here's what you need to do. Go get a lamb, bring it in, let me season it. I'll make a stew that will fool your father. Jacob says, well, if we're going to do this, let's do it right, okay? So he goes and he gets some animal skins. He puts them on his arms. He rubs the skins all over his body so that he smells like the fields and he smells like the outdoors. His arms, they feel like they're hairy. And when he takes the food in, his father asks, are you my son? Verse 19, Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I've done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing. Isaac asked his son, how did you find it so quickly? And listen to the scoundrel. The Lord your God gave me success. I mean, don't you just want to slap him? I mean, it's not enough that he's a lying cheat and he's taking advantage of his dying father. He's got to drag God into it, right? Well, God bless me. It was right outside the door. You know, Dad, I just shot it and drug it into the kitchen. That's all there was to it. And verse 21 says, Isaac said to Jacob, come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not. Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, the voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau. He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he blessed him, and he said, are you really my son Esau? Remember when your mom and dad would ask that? Not are you really my son, but are you telling me the truth? I mean, you'd already told him something, right? Are you telling me the truth? They're giving you the opportunity to recant. They're giving you the opportunity to fess up. And remember that feeling their eyes would lock on you and you try to stare back just as hard as you could and maybe you just lie right through your teeth. Dad, do you think I would lie to you? Isaac asked, are you telling me the truth, boy? I am. Then he said, my son, bring me some of your game to eat so that I may give you my blessing. Jacob brings it to him, and when he's close, Isaac's still not sure, so he hugs him and he smells him. And Jacob's smart enough to even be wearing Esau's clothes. Says, so he went to him and he kissed him, and when Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he blessed him. and said, "Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you of heaven's dew and of earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you." And part of me thinks that Isaac at this point must have been thinking, "Son, I'm going to take care of you here because you obviously haven't been able to take care of yourself. You sold your birthright for a bowl of stew, all right? So may your brothers bow down to you." And all the while, Jacob's just a-grinning. Verse 30 says, after Isaac finished blessing him, Jacob had scarcely left his father's presence. Bum, ba-dum, bum. His brother Esau came in from hunting. Don't mess with a hairy man, okay? Because Esau's response is pure hurt and pure anger. It says in verse 41 that Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. He said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near, then I will kill my brother Jacob." Well, Mom heard about it. So she told Jacob he was going to have to get out of Dodge. She convinced Dad that really, you know, he didn't need to be around those local Hittite women. So Isaac sent Jacob to go live with his grandfather so he could find a wife there. And Jacob gets out of town just ahead of the knife. And now you've got Jacob, who's a scoundrel on the run. He meets a fellow by the name of Laban who just happens to be his uncle. But guess who the scoundrel really meets? Another scoundrel. You see, his soon-to-be father-in-law, Laban, whose daughters he had seen at the well, he said, "Hey, you know, just because you're my nephew, that doesn't mean you got to work for me for free. I'll pay you. What are your wages?" And Jacob says, "I tell you what, that daughter of yours, Rachel, she is smoking. I'd like to marry her, huh?" And Laban says, "All right, work for me for 7 years. You can marry my daughter. Didn't say which one." See, Jacob didn't read the fine print here. And after working for him for 7 years, Laban, on Jacob's wedding night, gave Jacob his older daughter, Leah. And apparently she was not as smoking as Rachel, okay? Scripture says that she had weak eyes. Now, I don't know if that meant that she was like Festus, all right? I know I'm dating myself here, but got one eye looking over here and one eye looking over here, Or if she just didn't see very well, you know, would have been wearing glasses if glasses had been invented. So all she did was squint all the time. I really don't know, okay? Bottom line, she was not the woman Jacob wanted. And the Bible says Jacob didn't know it until the next morning. Surprise! I mean, on the wedding night, Laban sort of slips her in, maybe with a veil on or something. In the morning when the sun comes up, Jacob comes running out of the tent. He says, "Whoa, whoa, 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 you gave me the wrong girl." Laban says, "Pleased to meet you, scoundrel." "Oh, you wanted Rachel. Oh, well, you can have her too for another 7 years." Don't you love it when a scoundrel meets another scoundrel? But don't feel bad for Jacob, because he starts taking care of his father-in-law's flocks, and he comes up with this really complex way to sort of cheat him, and he begins separating out sheep that are speckled and sheep that aren't. He begins bringing all of these sheep over to his flocks, and punchline of the story is he sneaks off in the middle of the night with everything he's got, even takes some of his father-in-law's household gods. Little foreign idols, golden idols. Now, think about this. Your son-in-law moves into your basement, okay? Marries your daughter, works for you, and then boom, in the middle of the night, he takes everything with him, all right? He takes your flocks, your herds, your daughters, you know, the golden stuff that's laying around on the coffee table, all the little knickknacks, whatever. And all the sons are sitting there going, "Dad, there goes our inheritance down the road." So Laban goes off chasing after him, you know, and he says, "Jacob, what are you doing? You've robbed me." It's in the Bible. You can go look it up, okay? He says, "Why are you sneaking off in the middle of the night without even letting me kiss my grandkids goodbye?" And Jacob says, well, I was afraid you're going to take away your daughters. Laban says, no, but somebody stole my idols. Jacob says, search me. No, really, search me. And you start to see that some of Jacob's scoundrel attitudes have rubbed off on his wife, Rachel, because she lies to her own daddy about the gods. She takes the idols, she sits on them, comes up with some lady excuse, you know, and hides these things from her father. And then Jacob wants to act like he's all mad about it, you know. It says in chapter 31, verse 36, that Jacob was angry and he took Laban to task. What is my crime? What sin have I committed that you hunt me down? Now that you've searched through all my goods, what have you found that belongs to your household? Put it here in front of your relatives and mine and let them judge between the two of us. Oh, he's a scoundrel. You can go watch the movie later, a dirty, rotten scoundrel, all right? Jacob gets things patched up with Laban, but soon he's got more trouble because he decides he's going to go home. And he's got to patch up stuff with his brother. The scoundrel has to go meet with the brother that he cheated 20-some years ago. He decides he's going to head that way. He hears instead that his brother is coming his way with 400 men with him. So he starts to panic, all right? He tells his servants, he says, when you run into Esau, I'm going to give you all this cattle. I'm going to give you all these sheep. You tell him these are a gift from his servant Jacob. And then the last thing he does is he gets his wives and his kids and he says, hey, why don't you guys go on out in front? He's a sorry dude. I'm telling you what. So here comes Jacob and he's bowing down. Oh, brother. Oh, brother. Oh, my brother, you know, and big old hearted Esau just kind of grabs him around the neck and hugs him and says, man, let's forget about the past. That stuff was 20 years ago, okay? Who are all these kids? Well, these are my children. These are my wives. And Esau says, well, bless your heart. It must have been Southern. I don't know. Bless your heart, you know, and Jacob is forgiven. What? Don't let him off the hook. He cheated you, Esau. Don't let him off that easy. Don't worry. The scoundrel's going to get his in the end. Jacob settles down. One of his daughters, Dinah, gets involved with one of the Hivite ruler's sons. And I really don't know how to tell this story. Genesis 34 is not a pretty story. It involves words like violated and defiled. And it ends with Jacob's sons looking at this guy and saying, hey, you can have our sister on one condition. You and your entire tribe has to be circumcised. Well, surprisingly, they agree. Okay? But again, it was just a trick. Because when your dad is Jacob, you got a dad like Jacob, you've watched him cheat and steal his entire life, your entire life, it just sort of rubs off on you. And so it says in chapter 34, verse 25, 3 days later, after the mass circumcision, while all of them were still in pain, two of Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and attacked the unsuspecting city, killing every male. And all of a sudden, Jacob gets slapped in the face with his own scoundrelness. He says in verse 30, it says that he came to his sons, Simeon and Levi, and he says, you've brought trouble on me by making me a stench to the Canaanites and the Perizzites, the people living in this land. We're few in number, and if they decide they're going to join forces against me and attack me, I and my whole household will be destroyed. But they replied, should he have treated our sister like a prostitute? Because you see, Jacob is brought face to face with the fact that he's gone from being a son of promise through one scoundrel choice after another to now what he describes himself as being a stench on the land. So let me ask you, what do you do when you find yourself there? What do you do at this point? I mean, dare you call out to God? Is there any room for God to give you any kind of hope or any kind of help? Three things, and I'll go through them quickly. Jacob recognizes his state. He takes out the trash, and he goes back to square one. And it all happens in Genesis chapter 35. Beginning in verse 1, it says that God said to Jacob, "Go up to Bethel and settle there, and build an altar there to God who appeared to you when you were fleeing from your brother Esau." So 20-some years ago, when he's running after he's cheated his brother, he ends up in Bethel, where we didn't read it, but you can go back and read it. He has this dream, and he sees this stairway to heaven, and angels are going up it and down it, and God says, "You go back there." Jacob said to his household and all who were with him, "Get rid of the foreign gods you have with you, and purify yourselves and change your clothes. Then come, let's go up to Bethel, where I'll build an altar to God who answered me in the day of my distress, and who's been with me wherever I've gone." And the underlying thought is, no matter how much of a scoundrel I've been. So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods they had and the rings in their ears, and Jacob buried them under the oak at Shechem. Let me send you out real quick. Three things if you've been a scoundrel, or if you know one. Number one, recognize your reality. I mean, can you just stop long enough to take a long, hard look in the mirror and admit who you are? Sometimes we can see faults in other people so much better, like Jacob did in his own sons. Oh, look at that. And you're like, oh, whoa, 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 that's me. After recognizing, number two, are you willing to take out the trash? Because it shocks me that a guy who pretty much throughout his entire life has been about, what can he take? What can he get? How can I get more sheep? How can I get these gods? How can I get my brother's birthright? And he's all about sort of trying to take things and bring it to himself. It shocks me that a scoundrel like Jacob would bury all of these golden, valuable things under a tree. Because the burial was an act of saying, that stuff is trash. And that's what you do with trash. I mean, this is not a X marks the spot, you know, treasure hunt, and he's going to come back and get it later. He's treating it like a dump. These things that he would have considered valuable, he says, I'm getting rid of it. Is there anything you need to take out and just throw it away? What kind of trash is accumulated in your heart, in my heart, that we just need to get rid of? And then number three, God does a wonderful thing. Almost like Superman flying backwards around the earth, you know, and sort of turning back time. He looks at Jacob and he says, hey, why don't we just go back to square one? Why don't we go back to the place where we first met? And let's just start over. Personally, I don't think the scoundrel deserved it. But then again, I know I don't deserve it either. And yet God lets me go back to square one with him again and again and again. Man, this is one of those lessons that even if you've never heard it before, it's so straightforward you could teach it to your kids. Most of it, you know, but it can be deceptive, because I think our attitude a lot of times is when we've got a problem, we just sort of want to put a band-aid on it, just sort of cover it up. We sort of want to, you know, paint the fence, when the reality is we might need to just tear it down and start all over. And so I want you to think about your relationships today, and you know, maybe it's with a spouse. Maybe you've been putting a whole lot of band-aids on things and they're starting to pull loose. Maybe you just need to sit down and be honest. I've been a scoundrel. I've mistreated you. I've done all of these things. Can we Is it possible that we can start over? Maybe you need to sit down with your kids. You know, maybe you need to look them in the eye and say, hey, I have not been the dad, or I have not been the mom I need to be. I've let this go. I've not been a part of this. I should have been. Can we start over? Maybe you just need to bow your knees and talk to God and ask him, is it possible that we could begin again? Because I'll tell you what his answer will be. Every time, yes. He will start over with us no matter how much of a zero we've been. He will start over with us every single time if we're just willing to go back to square one with him. Nobody wants to admit they're a scoundrel. And yet the reality is, there's nobody in this room that's not. Bible says that while we were yet sinners, the perfect Son of God, Jesus, died in our place. So for all of us looking in the mirror and admitting this is who we are, now it's a matter of, what do I need to get rid of? What kind of trash do I need to take out and bury and be done with so that I can go back to square one with the people, with the God that matters? We have Stephen ministers in the church, and they'll be in the back of the auditorium this morning. And if you want to pray with somebody individually, I just invite you while we're singing to just step back and go there. Or you can come forward and pray with me. You can talk to me about anything that you feel like God has laid on your heart, or maybe right where you're standing. Ask God that question. Can we just start over? Because I know what his answer will be. Go back to square one with him, and he'll say yes. If your need is to step out, we invite you to do so as we stand.